today we're talking about birth. Right now, Illinois is in the minority of states that don't regulate home birth midwives.
You know, they say they care about safety and concern about the mothers having home births with these dangerous midwives. Okay, doctor, what are you going to do about these women then? Are you going to come and assist them? Of course not.
We'll hear from families that choose home birth, talk to the director of the first freestanding birthing center outside of Chicago. It just opened in Bloomington-Normal. And speak with the Illinois chair of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. They've recently come out in support of licensing home birth midwives in Illinois. Plus,
there's a drive to center field. Ellsbury back. He looks up. It's gone. Anderson absolutely drills the first pitch.
That's the new home game voice of the Chicago White Sox. We talked to Homewood native Jason Benetti about what it's like to be living his childhood dream calling Sox games. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Most babies in the United States are born in hospitals, but there's a growing trend of American women who don't want to have their baby that way, whether it's an actual birth at home or at a birthing center. Today, we're going to be talking to Illinois women who have chosen to give birth that way and to the midwives who have helped them. Unlike many other states, in Illinois, much of this is not regulated. And later on, we're going to be talking about home births and midwives. But first, we wanted to start with something that is regulated, independent or freestanding birthing centers. The first outside of Chicago just opened this week in Bloomington-Normal and has begun starting to take patients for prenatal care. Joining us on the line from Bloomington is Marlise Klopping-Davis, a certified nurse midwife and director of midwifery and clinical services at the birth center of Bloomington-Normal. Marlise, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What exactly does it mean that the birth center in Bloomington Normal is independent?
We are the first downstate freestanding birth center, and by that it means we are completely separate. We're not located in a hospital. We're not located in a clinic. We are our own freestanding facility. So we do prenatal care here. We also deliver babies here.
And what does it look like? For example, when you walk into delivery room, does it look like a hospital setting?
No, it looks very much like your home bedroom might look at home. Each room, we have three of them. Each room is individually decorated to a specific theme. We have our more modern room. It's more tones of gray and black. Our more, I call it, country Victorian room, and it's more frilly and soft. And then we have our third room is more peachy color. And so all of them are different.
Can you request which room you want before ahead of time? Oh, okay.
Yes, we do go over that. Moms get a tour of the facility, and they get to choose which room they like. And as long as their room that they want is not being used at the time, then they can have the room of their choice.
As I mentioned before, I may not have mentioned that 99% of births in the U.S. actually take place in a hospital. So I think there are probably a lot of people who are listening right now and wondering, why wouldn't you want to give birth in a hospital setting?
A lot of moms, if it's their repeat babies or they've had easy deliveries, and they want an option, this is an option for them. Obviously, with an out-of-hospital setting, we don't take high-risk patients. So, for instance, if you're having an early pregnancy you have to deliver early for whatever reason, those patients would not be a candidate for here because we only take low-risk women. So anyone who delivers between 37 weeks and 42 weeks, we will take you here as long as you're low-risk.
And what other high-risk candidates would be? I imagine if a woman has a condition like preeclampsia or things like that, is that what things you're thinking about also?
Yes. If they develop a complication during pregnancy, we have a very stringent set of guidelines that we have to follow set forth by the state. And one of those guidelines states that if the woman develops pregnancy-induced hypertension, that they are risked out of delivery, out of hospital, and they would be transferred care to the hospital setting and with an OBGYN.
We're speaking with Marlise Klopping-Davis. She's a certified nurse midwife. She's the director of midwifery and clinical services at the birth center of Bloomington Normal, which just opened this week. Before I bring someone else into this conversation, I wanted to invite our audience. If you have a comment or question about birth centers or home births, if you're a supporter or an opponent, we'd love to hear from you. You can join us. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455, or you can tweet to 21st Show. And as I mentioned, I wanted to bring someone else into this conversation as well. Dr. Maura Quinlan is an obstetrician and gynecologist. She's also the Illinois chair of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and based in Chicago. Dr. Quinlan, welcome to the 21st as well.
Thank you.
Can you help us understand the primary differences between giving birth in a hospital and a birth center like the one that we've just been talking about?
Sure, sure. And first of all, I just want to say that I think this is really an exciting step for Illinois, for women to have options in where they have their babies. The important thing for all of us is that a healthy woman, healthy mom, healthy baby, and there are a lot of ways to achieve that. And I think birth centers are great because they offer what I usually refer to with my patients as a low intervention delivery. If someone really hopes for nothing for pain, you know, no epidural, there's no need that we can foresee for a pediatrics team to be present. As the midwife we were just talking to mentioned, you know, a low-risk woman, I think it's fine for her to consider her options. And birth centers are great because they're certified nurse midwives who have really high standards of their training, and birth centers are affiliated with the hospital. So if the midwife that was just on the line, had a patient who had a complication during labor and I was working at the hospital nearby, she could call me and say, this is what's happening. And I'd say, you know, send her over, we'll take care of her from here. So it's a nice integrated system, which is kind of ideal. So the American College of OBGYN and I would say vast majority of obstetricians in the state support this as an option, especially since it's really made for low-risk women. Of course, it's not safe to have twins that way. It's not safe to have a vaginal delivery after a C-section, for example. There are some conditions that you just need that extra monitoring to be safe. But I think this is great for low-risk women.
Marlise, Dr. Quinlan was just mentioning that women who previously have had a C-section currently cannot receive care at the birth center in Bloomington Normal. That's a safety precaution?
Currently, it's a safety precaution. It is actually, the state gives us leeway as to what we can and can't take, and one of those requirements is that if we do accept sometime in the future, accept a VBAC woman, or a woman who wants to attempt a vaginal delivery after cesarean, they must have only had one previous cesarean. Any more than that, and they are risked out of center care. So the state has put very stringent guidelines on us for very good reasons, and we are just for low risk. And anything that becomes higher risk, like gestational diabetes, is not diet controlled. They're not a candidate for out of hospital birth center care.
Dr. Quinlan, I wanted to ask you about the C-section because I know obviously that's a procedure that can be life-saving in many cases, but we've also seen concern from health officials in recent years that the rate of 1 in 3 births being a C-section is too high and their unnecessary C-sections are putting women at risk. And I wanted to just ask you why the C-section rate in hospital settings is so high.
So you're absolutely right that we all could do better. The reason is complicated. There's a bunch of reasons. One that often is forgotten that I feel like I see all the time, we all do, is women who get frustrated at the length of labor or the length of time pushing and say, you know, can't I just have a C-section? I'm done. So one of the reasons is it can be tough for us to, you know, kind of be the bad guy and say, no, we got to push on. You have to keep trying. So some of it is patient request, and it's important for us over the course of prenatal care to explain those are not the same delivery. We really want to avoid C-sections whenever possible. It's major surgery. The complications, the pain is more after. The complications for next pregnancy is higher. So I think for some women, they sort of see it as equivalent, you know, it's a lot easier. I'll just come and have a C-section and be done. And in other countries, the C-section, other communities in some countries, the C-section rate is 80-90% because that can be done on request. Women can choose, and I've had women from other countries who come and see me and say, you know, I think I'm going to have a C-section on a certain day. And I say, oh, no, we don't do that here. We really prefer vaginal delivery and have to explain it. So one of the reasons why it's high is because it's sometimes done by request. And the other reason is that we do tend to probably give up earlier. We think that the labor is going more slowly. And the American College of OB-GYN has just recently put out some really great research about how that there isn't a magic time of labor. It's okay if labor is longer. It's okay if pushing is longer, to try to be patient and let it happen on its own. And then unfortunately, our medical malpractice for obstetricians in this country is just so high that some physicians may consider doing a C-section just to avoid a lawsuit, because you rarely get sued for doing a C-section, and sometimes the suit is for not doing one. So we try now to just make sure we document clearly how we are approaching the management of this labor. But I agree with you. When I started my training 25 years ago, the rate was closer to 17-20% at the hospital where I trained.
And now it's up to 30. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Right. And now it is 1 in 3. It depends on the institution. I'm at Northwestern now, and we do forceps assistant deliveries, which is another way to do an operative vaginal delivery to help a baby be born vaginally with some assistance. But not every institution does that. So in some institutions, if the woman's pushing, she's been pushing a while, she's exhausted, there's not many other options to offer her other than a C-section.
That's Dr. Maura Quinlan. She's the Illinois chair of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. We're also speaking with the new director of clinical services and midwifery at the Birth Center of Bloomington Normal. We got lots of comments on Facebook about this. In fact, Christine said, "I hope the success of the Bloomington Normal Center brings attention to the serious lack of options for most childbearing families in our state." Katrina said, "I'm so glad there's a freestanding birth center in Bloomington Normal because it will offer a desired alternative to mothers like me who are looking for holistic, patient-centered care during pregnancy and birth with providers who honor, respect, and competently facilitate natural childbirth." If you want to join us, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21st Show. Marlise, I wanted to ask you about, we heard Katrina's comment about an alternative to moms, especially as we're hearing Dr. Quinlan say some moms maybe are in a point when they're in labor where they're just saying, this is too much, I can't handle this anymore. What do you think a freestanding birthing center like the one that you all would do to maybe help prepare moms so maybe they're not in that situation where they're in the middle of labor?
We do a lot of education with our moms as they're coming through their prenatal care. And what's different about our care compared to like a traditional hospital clinic, when I was in hospital clinic setting, we had maybe 15 minutes to spend with our patient. With a birth center style of model of care, we have our first initial visit is an hour and an hour and a half long, depending on the needs of that mom, to review records to see what's going on with her and make sure she truly is a candidate for out-of-hospital birth. The return prenatal visits usually last about half an hour. So by the time moms get to the delivery of their baby, we know what's going on with the mom, we know what's going on in their family, we know what's going on in their social life. They become a part of us, and we really get to know them before they deliver. So I think that is different in itself, and it's a much more homey environment, whereas in the clinic setting, you may not have that much time to really get to know your patient, and especially I worked in a larger clinic, and you run in, you might see 30 people in a day, and go by the end of the day, you go, who did I see today? But at a birth center type setting, we limit how many people are seen per day, so we have that time to spend one-on-one with them.
Marlise, what kind of interest are you getting right now in the new birthing center?
We're getting a lot of interest. We've actually had to turn away people because...
From across the state, are you getting people interested?
We're getting people from North Pekin, down past Springfield, Champaign, beyond Champaign. So we're getting a wide range, Peoria and beyond. So we're getting quite a range, about an hour and a half to 2 hours distance.
Now, I know you all are not yet licensed to perform deliveries at the birth center. When do you expect that license will come through?
We're hoping it'll come through sometime in August. IDPH will not exactly give us a direct date as far as when they're going to come and do our final inspection. And we've already had our building and safety inspection, and that went very well. And we're just waiting for the medical component to give us the okay of when they're going to come out and do the actual medical building inspection.
And Marlise, how does it work with the birthing center? Do you all take insurance just like a hospital would?
Once we become licensed, we'll be credentialing with the insurance companies, so we will be taking insurances. And if on that rare occasion where for whatever reason our insurance groups do not cover birth center care, then we would be more than willing to work with a mom and her family that really would like this type of care but would have to pay for it out of pocket. And it's very affordable, and we make payment plans so they can have the experience that they want without saying, well, I guess I'm going to have to go to the hospital because my insurance won't pay for it.
Thanks for that. Let's go to Carol in Bartlett. Carol, welcome to the 21st. What's your comment?
Hi, thanks. I just want to address the comment that Dr. Quinlan made first about addressing the C-section rate, the first thing she addressed was blaming women for the high C-section rates, that they ask for it because labors are too long. And I just don't think that's true at all.
Yeah, Carol, thanks for that comment. Again, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455 if you'd like to join us. Dr. Quinlan, I'm not sure you exactly said you were blaming women, but you said it was certainly part of the statistics that maybe necessarily
right.
weren't accounted for?
Right. Oh, and I would never blame. You have to see a woman in a really hard labor to know there's no blame for
or any kind of labor for that matter, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Anyone who's had a baby knows it's called labor for a reason.
Right.
So, I just think that we all need to be educated all the way from, I've had partners, grandma say, can't you just have a C-section? She's in pain or whatever. So it's not a blame thing. It's just, as the midwife mentioned, it's just an education. If here, I try to explain to my patients throughout their prenatal care, here's the hope. Vaginal delivery, here's why we would need to do a C-section, but there's all these other reasons, things that could happen that don't require a C-section. So it's not a blame, it's just a need for education for everybody on how we can make C-sections only be done when they're absolutely necessary.
Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can keep the tweets and Facebook comments coming as well. We're going to continue this conversation with Dr. Quinlan. I want to thank Marlise Klopping-Davis with the Birth Center of Bloomington Normal for joining us on, I'm sure, what is a very busy week for you, Marlise. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much.
Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st.
The 21st is made possible by the Library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, preparing students and scholars for their fields by offering access to today's cutting-edge equipment and technology within advanced library environments and facilities. The University Library at Illinois.
Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been talking about women who don't want to give birth in a hospital. We were just talking about the first freestanding birthing center outside of Chicago that opened for business this week in Bloomington Normal. They're getting interest from all across the state, as you heard them say, for women who do not want to give birth within a hospital. We've also been talking to the Illinois chair of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. She's also an OBGYN herself, Dr. Maura Quinlan. We wanted to shift the conversation now to home births and midwives, and I wanted to welcome someone else into this conversation. By the way, all of you listening, we'd love to have your questions and comments on this. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. We've got lots of comments on Facebook. You can tweet them to us as well. Our handle is 21STShow. In studio with me, Champaign mom Shannon Morber. She's a doula and a childbirth educator, and she gave birth to 4 of her 5 children at home. Shannon, thanks for being with us in studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your first child was born in a hospital, and then all of your subsequent children were born at home. Why did you choose to do that?
Yeah, so our first was born, we were living up in Chicago at the time, and we took childbirth education classes. We kind of got an idea of, ideally, without complications, how we'd like the birth to go. And I had opted for, I was hoping for lower intervention, letting physiologic birth just kind of unfold in the way that it does, again, barring any complications. And our experience, unfortunately, in the hospital, we were met with some resistance to the way that I had indicated I would prefer to labor. And
was that medically? Was that because of drugs? Or
yes. So when I went in, labor started by my water breaking. So when the amniotic sac breaks, some care providers do like to see you give birth within a certain amount of hours
because
of the risk of infection.
Mm-hmm.
And so that did kind of, already start me on this path of we have to watch you a little bit closer. But anytime anything came up and my husband and I tried to open a conversation about our options, options and kind of what our choices were and what the alternatives were. We were met with basically, it felt like a stone wall. You know, they said, this is what you need to do, or we're going to have to wheel you in for a cesarean. And it just came off very aggressive, especially when I was in labor.
And had you talked to them before about what you wanted your birth plan to be? Was everybody on the same page about that you thought before you went in?
So two things looking, I mean, you know, in life, there's always things like, well, this is the lesson I learned from that. And looking back, I would have chosen to birth at a different hospital with a different care provider. The hospital I was in was a teaching hospital, and so they tended to practice a little more aggressively, I think, because of that. And the group of doctors I was in, I had cleared, quote unquote, my birth plan with one of them, and I brought it to a prenatal saying, is there anything on here that looks like a red flag that I'm going to get a lot of pushback about? Here's where I'm birthing. And she kind of gave it back to me. I was like, no, I think it should be fine. And so I don't know if she didn't have a recognition that the nursing staff was going to give me more pushback than she thought they would, or if she didn't want to have an uncomfortable conversation with me about things that I was indicating a preference for. So,
in your births that you've had at home here in Champaign, did you have a midwife with you?
Yes, yes.
And Dr. Quinlan, I wanted to bring you back into this conversation because we were earlier speaking with Marlies Klopping-Davis, and she's a certified nurse midwife to practice in a hospital. Can you explain Illinois regulations about midwives and their performing practices in homes and why that's not regulated in Illinois?
Right. So first I have to say I'm sorry that the person who was just talking had a bad experience in the hospital. But the way it works in Illinois is there are many states where there are midwives licensed to do deliveries at home. And in Illinois, that is not the case. I think it's about half the states in this country allow home births. It's really, really important for your listeners to know the difference that the person who was on the program a minute ago is a nurse midwife. So she's a registered nurse that then has a master's degree, an advanced practice nurse, in preparing for deliveries. So she's a nurse midwife. There's a group there, they call themselves certified professional midwives. It's a name that they have developed that is not nursing. So they don't have a master's degree in nursing. They don't really have to have any specific undergraduate degree or a college degree, really. We used to be apprenticeship, meaning, you know, you work with someone who does the job and learn sort of by doing. Now there is some more strict criteria for how these certified professional midwives and non-nurse midwives, they used to be called lay midwives, how they are trained. So in Illinois, what's different, which I imagine is what you were getting to, a law was introduced this year to license these non-nurse midwives to do deliveries at home. So as it stands now, home deliveries by non-nurse midwives are not licensed.
And Dr. Quinlan,
Right.
Historically, your organization, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, has opposed laws that would license home birth midwives. As you're saying, this year, you personally began working to support a bill that would license certified professional midwives. What changed?
Exactly. So there's a bunch of things changed. In the past, I've been working on this for a number of years, and in the past, the legislation that was introduced was very vague. Unlike the conversation we were having a few minutes ago, there was no requirements for only low-risk women. There was no review of outcomes. There was no requirements for training. And we as a specialty devoted to the health of women and infants throughout labor, you know, and delivery, there's no way we could support a bill that would involve significant risks to women and their infants. So our group, the pediatrics group, were really uniformly opposed. What's different is that this year, the group that introduced this bill this year were very willing to work together. And I was willing to, we as a specialty were willing to work with them too, to say, let's figure out how we can make this safe. Because what we're worried about is there's an increase, this isn't going away. As you've seen from callers, there are many women who've had a bad experience or for a variety of reasons really want a low intervention delivery or a home delivery of their infant. And so we just felt as a specialty, we need to try to make this as safe as we can. And then many people will quote the European numbers In Britain, for example, women will be sort of stratified when they present for prenatal care to deliver at home or the hospital. They can choose either, but many women deliver at home in a very integrated system with nurse midwives who are in close touch with the closest labor and delivery in case things happen. So we thought, let's see if we can at least tell the group that sponsored the bill, we will remove our opposition to this bill if it has standards of training of the non-nurse midwives, if it has only low-risk women, if it has criteria throughout the pregnancy, the birth, the care of the newborn, if it has criteria that if any of these things happen, these complications happen, that mom or baby will have to go into the hospital to be evaluated. And there's a review board that will review bad outcomes or complicated cases to see if things need to be done differently.
So, Dr. Quinlan, where does that stand? Dr. Quinlan, where does that bill stand right now then?
Yep. So what was really lovely about the process is that the group sponsoring the bill said, okay. And so we worked with them to write a bill that we could remove our opposition that seemed like a safe, really a model bill for the country to make home births as safe as possible. And I did get, as you can imagine, I got some opposition from my colleagues because we all have seen many very complicated high-risk women trying to deliver at home. Things go bad. They come into our emergency rooms and we're left with this complicated situation that could have turned out so differently if the woman had had the care that is appropriate for how high risk she is. So where this bill stands, the American Academy of Pediatrics in Illinois continued to be opposed to it. So that physician group was opposed to it because they felt they were concerned about what it meant for the baby.
The Illinois State Medical Society also opposes it. Okay. So it sounds like there's a lot of work to be done in terms of trying to get that bill passed. I wanted to go to a caller, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to Becky in Island Lake. Hi, Becky. You support home births. Can you tell me why?
Well, because I have had home births myself. Actually, all five of my children were home births. The last one ended up being a transport. And I since have become a certified professional midwife, and I work with several of the home birth CNMs in Chicagoland area doing assists as an assistant to the home birth CNM.
Becky, as someone who's a certified professional midwife, would you like to be regulated by the state of Illinois?
Yes, with lots of CPMs already get licenses from one of the other 30 states that already offer them, for example, Wisconsin.
And do you have a license from Wisconsin?
I'm pending right now.
Okay.
So I've applied, but I haven't received it yet.
Okay.
There's 30 other states that CPMs can already go and practice in, and Illinois just continues to... It's basically the Illinois State Medical Society. We were so happy that the Illinois chapter of ACOG and Dr. Mora worked with us to get a bill that was, that they could remove their opposition to, and that helped a lot. But the Illinois State Medical Society is just unbelievably heavy and strong in Springfield, and they just, as a group of physicians, they just don't want midwives of any kind.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that comment. And I want to thank Dr. Quinlan as well for taking the time to join us. She's Dr. Moore Quinlan. She's a OBGYN herself. She's also Illinois Chair of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Quinlan.
Oh, my pleasure.
I wanted to invite one more person into this conversation. And on the line with us from Northern Illinois, we have Anne, who's a certified professional midwife. And she asked us to not use her real name on the show because as we've been talking about, she is licensed to attend home births legally in Wisconsin. But when she does that here in Illinois, it is considered illegal. Anne, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
I have a question for you, and it's a question actually that we got from someone from staff on Facebook. She wanted to know what the process looks like when a low-risk pregnancy becomes high-risk during delivery. I wonder if you could explain that for us.
Sure. Well, as you said, I'm licensed in Wisconsin. I do a lot of births up there, and so I can use that as an example. They got licensing for CPMs in 2007, and so now they've become fully integrated within the system. Dr. Quinlan was talking about that for birth centers and how much that makes it safer, and we want the same thing. We want to be integrated. So if something is going on during the labor, depending on what it is, I might call my backup doctor first and talk to him about it. But if not, and we need to go to the hospital, we can safely go into the hospital. I call as we're going in, talk to labor and delivery, perhaps the doctor, usually a nurse, tell them what's going on, what I think the problem is, and we go in. They take her immediately up to labor and delivery, where they, in the hospitals that I've worked with up there, they treat the families very nice. There's no shaming or bullying, which can occur a lot in Illinois, and they take care of the problem.
And I think Steph was wondering for women who are thinking about this, what they need to be worried about, I guess, with if you're having a low-risk pregnancy, what you need to be thinking about during delivery in terms of what might go wrong. I imagine as women are trying to weigh the pros and cons of this, what would you say to them?
Well, we have a list of criteria, too, as the birth center midwife talked about. As a CPM, we are certified professional midwives, and we have the same certifying agency as the CNMs do. Our training is all in out-of-hospital care, and it is actually the experience level that we have to have before we're certified is actually more extensive.
So who does that certification, then, if the state doesn't do it?
Well, the state does the licensing.
I see.
But it's the National Commission of Certifying Agencies that certify nurse certified nurse midwives.
I see.
The CPM credential and even nursing. So we have the same type of oversight on our credential. So for a family, so we have the same kind of criteria that we're looking at prenatally. If again, like the birth center nurse midwife said, if the mom develops hypertension or preeclampsia, that would risk her out of a home birth. So we are looking at the same types of things and in labor. All of our training is in out-of-hospital care, very low-tech, but we have Dopplers. And what we want to be able to have when we work in Illinois is to keep things safer for home birth families. There's 800 to 1,000 home birth families every year in Illinois, year after year.
800 to 1,000. Why?
Yeah.
I wanted to bring Shannon back into this conversation who's with us. Shannon, how, if all of this is sort of a little, I imagine it's kind of a little underground, how did you find a midwife to assist you? Is this just sort of communities or Facebook communities? I know. Thanks to everybody in those Facebook groups who've been an active participant in the show today.
Yeah. So I joke with my husband that back in 2005, when we were seeking out a midwife, that he coined the term black market midwife. He probably really didn't, but that's when we were looking, we had gotten the names of three different CNMs, certified nurse midwives in Chicagoland. That's where we were living at the time. And so we proceeded to call and then interview with them. One of them, we were out of her traveling distance. And then the other two were, one was about an hour away from us and one was about almost 2 hours away, but we were willing to travel that for prenatal care if it meant, you know, having a different experience. As it turns out, we also got the names of a couple of certified professional midwives, and one I called was, she was actually due with a baby herself a month after my due date. And then another actually had stopped practicing in Illinois because of the legal climate, but she had passed along one more name. And so this is why my husband said, do we need a secret
handshake? So people just kind of talk to each other, and that's how they find it.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, we just have about a minute left. So, Anne, I wanted to ask you very quickly, can you, for people who are listening to this who have never heard of this issue before, what do you want them to know about it?
That home birth is safe. Many research papers have been done to show that there can be risk, as there are in hospital birth also, but we want to be able to provide for families who choose home birth, and home birth is legal across the nation. It is not illegal to have a home birth. What is illegal in Illinois is to have a trained, certified provider with them that's a CPM. There's only 6 or 7 CNMs in the whole state that do home birth. There's, I believe, one doctor left, and now we have a couple of birth centers. That's it. That's not enough to take care of 800 to 1,000 women.
Thanks for that. That's Anne, a home birth midwife in Northern Illinois. Thanks also to Shannon Morber, Champagne Mom, to share her experience. Thanks to everyone who called and tweeted as well. You can continue the conversation online on our Facebook search for the 21st. Coming up, the new home play-by-play announcer for the Chicago Sox.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Drive to center field. Ellsbury back. He looks up. It's gone. Anderson absolutely drills the first pitch.
You're listening to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and that is the new voice Sox fans are hearing for home games. Jason Benetti, the Homewood, Illinois native and lifelong Sox fan, is now living his childhood dream of being a sportscaster. And he joins us now. He's on the line. Hey, Jason, welcome to the 21st.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. So I know the Sox are in third. It's been an up and down season, and we're going to talk about that. But I feel like I have to start by asking you about basketball and the huge Chicago sports news today that Dwayne Wade is leaving the Miami Heat to go to the Chicago Bulls. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it's really cool to have a local guy once again. I mean, it sounds very familiar. We've had a lot of that going around the town these days, but a local guy coming back who, loves the town, loves the Bulls. And I did think it was funny. I saw Doug McDermott posted on Instagram his jersey with the number 3 on it being Dwayne Wade's jersey. And he basically said, McDermott did, it's all yours, take it away. Which is a very nice welcome.
That's great. Well, I know Chicago sports, I would say, definitely are a little bit of a religion. And you grew up in Homewood. Do you remember your first Sox game? I imagine it was at Kaminsky Park.
So what I recall from my first Sox game is, and I think people know this by now, that my walking is a little bit different than the average person. And I recall my first Sox game, I was sitting in the upper deck. And as I was going into the upper deck, I was like, can I hold on to you, Dad? And I remember very vividly my dad giving me a piggyback ride down the stairs at U.S. Cellular Field's upper deck. But I remember so many games. And the thing that sticks with me is, and this is kind of a strange memory to have, but the park smells the same. Like the Italian
sausage.
Does the
cell still smell the same then?
What's that?
Does the cellular field, does that smell the same?
That's what I'm saying.
It does. Okay.
The scents in the ballpark are the same. I mean, it's like the Italian sausage and the bratwurst and the onions and everything combined, and then suddenly you get the smell of popcorn every once in a while, but it's like the same park that I went to as a kid, which is really, I noticed that day one this season, and I was like, man, this is wild.
So, Jason, I have to ask you, do you think Wrigley Field does not smell the same?
You know what? Here's the thing. I haven't been back to Wrigley Field in a couple years. Last I went, Len Casper, the TV announcer for the Cubs, is a friend of mine. Last I went, it was a couple years ago, 2014, and I was up in the press box. And
Smell anything in the press box.
Well, yeah. I mean, I went to Wrigley as a kid, and I've been there, and it's a fine, great place to watch a game. But the scent of U.S. Cellular Field with the food is this very memorable thing for me.
Spoken like a true Sox fan, Jason. You mentioned walking a little bit differently than other kids when you were little. Can you explain that for people who may not know?
Yeah, so I have cerebral palsy, which I've been very fortunate in terms of what it affects. It affects my gait, my walking, but I have no pain. I'm basically stress-free with it. The only thing that I deal with is perception in some ways. And I think, as the days and years go by and people understand what I'm doing and why I look like what I look like and people ask questions, I think people can get around it fairly easily. So, yeah, a lot of people with CP have it much worse than I do.
As a kid, did you think because of your cerebral palsy you wouldn't be able to be an announcer? Because I know this was your dream that you had as a kid. Did you think it would affect that?
You know what? I never really did because I was too dumb to think about it. The point being, I did radio. To start, I was not a TV announcer until 5-6 years ago. I was mostly a radio guy, and I think that's why I got started in radio is because that's where the inhibitions are gone. You sit down and nobody sees you, and that got me comfortable with the microphone. And then moving on, I ended up doing more TV. So no, I didn't. There were times where it takes a little more convincing for people to understand that maybe I can do the job as well as somebody who can walk into a room straight or look directly at the camera. But I think I think there are a lot of people out there who are very willing to look past the first trait they see.
Do you have a preference of TV or radio, or now because you're doing play-by-play, it's almost like you're doing radio, right? Because people aren't necessarily really seeing you that much.
Here's the great part of TV. The great part of doing a game on TV, and I love radio too. I love the description. I love using the English language to tell you about things that you can't see. I think that's fantastic, and I'm glad that podcasting is growing again and as sort of a second form of radio, because I think the theater of the mind is a beautiful thing. But TV is this wonderful opportunity to watch a game and talk about the game. You're much more of a commentator when it comes to the game, and you take in big spots and you let the crowd tell the story. And there are so many strategic decisions in a baseball broadcast in terms of when to talk to your partner, how to have this conversation, what question to ask. Do I need to ask a question right here? Will it happen organically? Or whatever happens, there's so much opportunity to expand your mind over the course of especially a baseball game, but a television broadcast on the whole, that I really do love the challenges and the excitement of both.
Jason, can we talk about your high school for a minute? Because I want to ask, what's in the water at Homewood Flossmoor that produces so many great broadcasters? What is it, you think?
You know, I remember the water fountains being exceptionally cold at 18.
Okay.
Cold water. Here's what it is. Here's what it is. For so long, Megan Tipton and Bob Comstock, Megan was the TV czar and Bob was the radio czar, but they are, you know, use the word czar and that seems to be heavy-handed. They are wonderful people who were so welcoming to kids who, you know, every day after school, there would be a group of us, and it was a rotating group on a day-to-day basis that would tape video shows and tape radio shows and be live on the radio and do all of these things. So, I mean, it was the teachers at the time, and they've both since retired, but WHFH and VTV still live on at Homewood Flossmoor High School, and rightfully so. I mean, I was at the radio station, for example, the day that the Columbine shooting happened, and I vividly remember being in Mr. Comstock's office.
Wow.
And essentially taking this thing in while I'm writing the sportscast for the day. I mean, but it's essentially a second home for all of us, whether it be Lawrence Holmes or Scott Merkin or Ben Bradley or whomever it is. I mean, you miss some when you make a list, but Chuck Garfine as well, who I work with on the Sox telecasts, it's this place where you can go and you can learn to be an adult while doing kid stuff, but also very adult stuff.
Well, there's even a WHFH tie to how you ended up in this job, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's... I was flying in for this 50th anniversary of the Viking Broadcasting Company, which is the overall umbrella of WHFH and VTV, and I happened to call the White Sox on a suggestion from Len Casper, the Cubs, and he said, you should just call the Sox and let them know that you're interested. And I called, and I left a message, and Brooks Boyer, the marketing guy for the White Sox, called me back and says that he's interested as well. Will I be in town at all? And I said, well, actually, in about a week and a half, I'm going to be flying in for this banquet in Homewood. And so I went to the banquet on a Saturday. I interviewed with the Sox on Monday, and that was what started the ball rolling.
Jason, when I got my first show a couple years ago, I feel like I definitely spent much of the first year kind of being a little amazed that this was my job. And I would even hear before, I would be sitting in the studio and the newscaster would be like, coming up, it's the afternoon shift with Nyla Boodoo. And I'd think, oh, that's me. Do you feel that way now?
You know what? It's this combination. It's this very odd combination of being exhilarated every day because it's the ballpark that I grew up going to, and tamping down that exhilaration because I want to make sure that I'm doing the job of a baseball announcer. I mean, baseball is such a long season. It's 162 games, and some days you're going to lose big, and some days you're going to win big, and everything in the middle is going to happen too. And so if you get too up for anything going on in a baseball season, I think, you know, leading up to the really big moments, I think you're probably overselling it a little bit. And sometimes I do that in a game because I think it's a big spot, but it turns out to not be a big spot. So that's something I've been kind of batting back and forth with myself every day is, you know, I don't want to be a kid in a candy store. However, I am every day. And that it's an interesting dichotomy.
Well, I also feel like I have to say, I don't know that the Sox have really helped you this year, because I feel like it has been a little up and down. And I wanted to ask, as we're just talking about the game itself and the team, first of all, who do you think's been the biggest surprise this year since seeing the team in person for you?
Biggest surprise? That's always an interesting question, because you have these preconceived notions of what people are going to be. And to me, the neatest thing is I've seen Chris Sale a lot on television, but I had not seen him extensively in person prior to me coming to the White Sox. And Chris Sale's an all-star, and he very likely will start the all-star game for the American League, or at least has a really good shot of doing it. Maybe not very likely, but certainly likely. Watching him pitch and watching batters' reactions to his stuff in person, and watching him throw on the side, and watching the way the ball moves out of his hand, it's not a surprise numerically what he's doing, but for somebody who's only seen him on TV or only seen him from afar, to see what he does is absolutely magical on the mound.
So as you mentioned, the All-Star break's coming up. The Sox have quietly, I think, just won the past five series in a row. What do you think the Sox need to do in the second half of the season here?
I think win all of the games. I mean, no, here's the amazing thing.
And how exactly should they do that,
right,
Jason?
No. I am being glib for no apparent reason. The thing about this season has been, and you mentioned it, you alluded to it, they go off to this rambunctiously great start, and then they go into this second portion of the season where they're losing a bunch of games, and now they're 11-5 in their last 16, and they've won those five straight.
And everyone's afraid to say, is this going to stick?
Right, and so what ends up happening is even specific portions of the team, you say, like, oh, do they need a better bullpen, or do they need better hitting? Well, the hitting has been outstanding the last 2 weeks, and the bullpen in April was like a historically good bullpen. And then in May, the bullpen was not good at all. And then in June, the bullpen was better, and now it's been really good. And the hitting is off and on. And that's a baseball season. I just think they need to adjust as well as they've adjusted in this 16-game stretch. If they can keep up that level of adjustment and avoid that kind of nadir that they had about a month and a half ago, that's what would carry them to the playoffs rather than any specific portion of the team doing anything, because I think it's just a matter of making sure to be steady.
And it's tough, as you said, because it is such a long season, as it's interesting to think of your perspective on it as you're calling the games. And I'm just wondering, I mean, do you think there are any weaknesses the Sox have? That do you think there needs to be a trade or two, or what do you think about it?
You know, I don't think it's here's the deal. I mean, James Shields, Miguel Gonzalez as starting pitchers. Those two guys struggled some about a month ago. When James Shields first came over, he got knocked around his first three starts, and people were saying, well, do you send him to the bullpen? What do you do? And the Sox said, well, wait, let's see what happens. And he has gotten significantly, appreciably better. So I think the weaknesses have become the strengths, and the strengths have become the weaknesses. I think the one thing that you see as the lineup is stacking, and part of the reason Robin Ventura had been using two catchers in the starting lineup recently was because they don't have enough, at least on certain days, left-handed bats as compared to the rest of the league. So if you're looking just from a lineup construction perspective, the one thing that you would see that would be missing at points is just a left-handed bat to give pitchers a different look.
Are you allowed to make predictions for the rest of the season, can I ask?
Oh, I can predict anything.
Okay,
I very likely
go.
Be wrong.
So are you going to make one?
Sure. Yeah. What are you
for the rest of the season? How are the Sox are the Sox making the playoffs? How far are the Sox going this year?
I feel very comfortable saying that they're going to be right in it down to the wire in September. Whether it's the American League Central or the Wild Card, this seems like a team that has staying power in the playoff race. I can't tell you how it's going to shake out, but I do feel like that this team, not only is this team in its current iteration primed to be in it, but I also think Rick Hahn, the general manager, and everybody in the front office is ready to make a move if a move presents itself in terms of adding a left-handed bat or a reliever, which everybody needs at some point leading up to the trade deadline. So I think this team is going to be in it to the end of the season.
Jason, really quickly, we have less than a minute left. What advice do you have for kids out there who want to end up where you have?
My my greatest piece of advice I would say is find people who are really good at what they do and ask them how they do it. Find people who are exceptional teachers and let them teach you. Don't be defensive, which I went through a lot in terms of, you know, I walk into a room, people discount me, whatever it might be. If you really take people's advice to heart, especially in a creative industry, I think you'll figure out where you belong.
Jason Benetti calling home television games for the Sox. Hey, Jason, great to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow we're going to be speaking with a New York Times reporter who literally wrote the book on the Zika virus, and he'll answer your questions about summer travel. We also want to be getting reaction from Illinois residents to the recent shooting deaths of two black men, Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge and Philando Castile in Minneapolis, by white police officers. So that's tomorrow's show. Stay tuned for that. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.